So wonderful to see you in this very warm afternoon at Fusion in the Content. So we're super happy to host all of us here, all of you here, and also have wonderful speakers. And now the talk you're all coming here for is Abolish Frontex. It will be happening in English. There's live translation available to German. And I'm very happy to welcome here Azizo Shihu and also Matthias Monroy. Matthias is part of CILIP, the magazine for police and civil rights. It's difficult to say it in English if you always only know the name in German. And Azizo is part of the Alarm Phone Network, which is a volunteer-run network from Morocco, from Niger, you're from, but also it's from Tunisia, and also there are lots of volunteers from Europe. And so we will discuss about that more. And I'm very happy to welcome you here and that you're presenting how we can abolish Frontex. So this is the applause moment for Abolish Frontex. And we also will have a tiny amount of time for Q&A, so you can also, remember your questions for the end of the session. So have fun.
Yeah, thank you very much. I will start with a short introduction about Frontex, but before that we would at least mention that we have to mourn like 37 people more that died at a border, in this case on the Moroccan and Spain border in Melilla recently, so when they tried to climb over the fence. So there are different numbers given, official ones, and from a Moroccan civil rights or human rights organization. And this example shows also clearly the politics of externalization of the European Union. So this talk is not only about Frontex, it's also about the idea of pushing the borders like of Fortress Europe more far away to African countries. So Aziz will explain this for the case of Niger, but we also see it in Morocco, for example. And it's interesting or important to have in mind that the border guards, like border control and border surveillance, it's always in the hands of national governments. So in this case, in Morocco, it was not Frontex killing the people. It was the Spanish and the Moroccan border guards. But Frontex is helping these cases. Frontex is giving surveillance. Frontex is backing these kind of politics. Frontex is giving money and stuff like that. And this is what the talk want to explain a little bit, like the exact role of Frontex and how this is being transformed in a country like Niger, for example. So my presentation is in German, so I hope that's not confusing for you, but I will explain it in English. So just to know that that Frontex is an EU agency, that means it's kind of an authority. So some people think it's a private actor or something, so it's public, and it's consisting of border guards of the member states. So normally Frontex is asking for a mission, and then the member states are contributing. And Frontex has many different other tasks. So I mentioned some of them here. For example, Frontex is becoming more and more important in terms of deportations. But what they also do is like, they call it risk analysis. So they always collect numbers of refugees. So in which countries, how many people are leaving and which route do they take and when and where they might hit the European borders to be prepared. So this kind of stuff is what Frontex is doing. And when I say hit the borders, this is also the vocabulary of Frontex. So they talk about migration streams, so this kind of narrative. Just to have an idea what Frontex is doing. It's very important that every couple of years the basic law for Frontex, it's a regulation on a EU level, is changing. This is a normal thing. So that they kind of updated, and with the last update of the Frontex regulation, the agency is allowed to have own stuff. So they will build up an own border force with own uniforms in four different categories. So, okay, you cannot see this very well, but the most important thing is anyway the category one on the left column. So these are up to 2027, there will be 3,000 border guards under the control of the Frontex director, and they also will have Frontex uniforms, which is a real new thing. This never happened before, that the EU had own police women or men with uniforms, and Frontex is the first and the only agency that is really armed by Frontex. So they are buying 2,500 guns and all the stuff that police is normally equipped with. And this is an important thing, because in my introduction, I explained that normally Frontex is collecting equipment and personnel, like stuff, from the member states. So this is how it was in the past. But now Frontex, they have their own border force, which is immediately ready, so they don't have to wait until the cars arrive from France, Germany, wherever, to be deployed in Greece, for example. So they have their own equipment and their own personnel ready. So, yeah, just to have in mind. And also in the recent years, the organization culture changed a lot with Frontex. So probably most of you are aware that the executive director, Fabrice Légérie, he had to resign because many scandals came up. So many things about how Frontex helped with pushbacks were uncovered. I will not go into detail here, but I want to just summarize that the big problem of Frontex is they are independent. So if you look in the regulation, if you read the basic law for Frontex, it is really written, this is a quote, in operative and technical matters, Frontex is independent and also legally, administrative and financially autonomous. So there is nobody that can give Frontex any orders. This is like, that was not an accident, so this was agreed upon in 2005 when Frontex was founded. So the EU and also the EU Parliament, they said yes to this configuration. And this makes it very difficult also like for the member states or for the EU Commission to change Frontex. So they are beginning to have an own life, Eigenleben, as we say in German, I don't know the English word. So yeah, these regulations, they give the director much more power. So this image is the old director when they received the new cars, and he's really like a car broker, like a car trader, like being nice to the car. And it's a very stupid video. It's on YouTube. And Frontex is also getting more and more and more money. I want to focus a little bit on the operations of Frontex. So this is the most important thing. Frontex has different operations, mostly in member states. So here on the map, you can see how important these routes of refugees are for Frontex. These are the numbers, like the dots. The size of the dots is because of the numbers, how many people are crossing from where. And this is everywhere where Frontex has a mission. On land borders, Frontex has several missions, but they are now kind of summarized in one large mission, which is called Terra. And the numbers of people involved, like border guards, differ, so it might be 600 at the moment, because there is also a new mission in Moldova. I will come to this. Like in the Mediterranean, I just want to name them, like Themis is the most important, it's in the central Mediterranean, Poseidon is the Greek mission in the Aegean Sea, and there is one, Indalo, in Western Mediterranean. And I will come later to another one. So Frontex normally is very difficult to detect them making pushbacks, so to catch them when they directly do pushbacks. So normally pushbacks, like this means irregularly push the people back when they cross the border without giving them the possibility for an asylum application. So this is normally carried out by national border guards. So it's normally Greece doing the pushbacks. It's Spain in Melilla or Ceuta, or it's Poland to Belarus and Lithuania. So it's normally not Frontex doing the pushbacks, but Frontex is covering the politics, like in the Aegean Sea, for example, when there is a Romanian Frontex boat in the area when the Greek Coast Guard is pushbacking people, or the German police with a ship. So they have like people on board and hand them over to the Greek Coast Guard and they push them back. So it's not the German police directly doing the pushback or Frontex, but they are initiating, helping, covering, supporting them. I want to point out one important thing in my opinion, how Frontex is acting regarding Libya. So Frontex started to have an own aerial surveillance. Frontex was buying planes, and so they withdraw their ships. So the ships in Frontex missions in the Mediterranean are not important anymore. And they are also not kind of not existing, but they were enhancing their aerial surveillance. So less ships, more planes, and drones as well. And the images are given to the Libyan Coast Guard to bring the people back to Libya. And this is what we call pullback. So it's kind of a pushback. So it's not the Italian Coast Guard or Frontex who is bringing the people back to Libya, which would be not legal according to international law, but to call the Libyans to pull them back. And this is why this aerial surveillance is more and more important, because the idea is to stop the people as they leave and not when they arrive in the high seas or near Italy, so to stop them as early as possible. And this is also a new Frontex regulation in 2016 when Frontex was allowed to buy own equipment. And what they did immediately, so they made leasing contracts for these airplanes which are doing aerial surveillance in the Mediterranean between Libya and Italy, but mostly in the southern Mediterranean. So this is how Frontex is helping for pushbacks, which we call in that case pullbacks, by the aerial surveillance. I would end this presentation with the so-called Frontex status agreements. So normally Frontex is not allowed to act in a third country, like a third state out of the EU. Normally Frontex was founded, that was the idea, to act only in the European Union. But that was changed as well. So since 2019, Frontex is allowed to operate outside the European Union. The first states that made such an agreement were some Balkan states. So the agreements with Bosnia and Macedonia are agreed already, but they have to go to the parliament. And the parliaments will probably not accept it. And this is also kind of interesting. So when we talk about Niger, so some people would say that the European Union is dictating what the people in Bosnia are doing, what the people in Macedonia are doing, like the government, or what the government in Morocco is doing. It's not as easy as that. So I would say the countries, they know what power they have, because the EU wants that they keep the migrants back, and they want something in return, of course. And this is why some of the agreements are not yet concluded, because these governments want to drive the price, want to raise the price, so if they keep the migrants, refugees back from the European Union. So, here is one in Albania. I have just some numbers, how many. This I find quite important in Montenegro. So some people try to pass the Balkan route on sea and to not be detected at a land border. And this sailing boat was detected by a Frontex airplane with a heat sensor, like an infrared camera. And the camera found that the ship is very hot, so which is not normal. And so then they called the Coast Guard, the Montenegrin Coast Guard, and they found 50 people packed inside of the sailing boat. But Frontex found them and reported them to Montenegro, which is also not a EU state. Like, yeah, I will skip that. And now to pass over to Aziz, these Balkan agreements, status agreements by Frontex, they were kind of a blueprint. So that was very clear that, of course, Balkan countries are interesting, important for Frontex to collaborate with, but the most important are African countries. And there is no African country yet that allows Frontex being there, like operating. And now Senegal might be the first one. So in February, Frontex and the EU, the Commission, they all went to Senegal, gave a press conference and said, yeah, we're going to have a Frontex mission here soon. But now this is calming down a bit, and it seems that Senegal is also slowing down the process because, as I said, they want to have a higher price for that. So they are still negotiating it. And there are also proposals to have these kind of agreements with Mauritania and Morocco. So I think this will come in 1, 2, 3 years. It might take a while, but then we will see Frontex operating armed with EU uniforms in these countries. And this is my last slide. So I said Frontex is not operating in these countries, but I mean operating in terms of border guards at a border. But of course, Frontex is active in these countries. So they have kind of ambassadors, they call it liaison officer, like in certain countries, also in Niger, for example. And they have something, they call it African Frontex Intelligence Community. Intelligence, the German word, you can translate it with Aufklärung, but you can also translate it with Geheimdienst. It's something in between. So it's police or secret service agencies from these states, like I think it's 30 countries now. I think the Ivory Coast was the latest joining the this network. And they are collecting information about people who might migrate, so refugees who might want to travel to the EU to give, to produce the statistics, the numbers for Frontex. Yeah, so this was kind of a brief introduction what the EU, how the EU is kind of externalizing their migration politics and a little bit about the role of Frontex. And now I would hand over to Aziz.
Thank you. I don't know where it is actually. Is that just yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Dear participants, I'm really happy to share our network with other people, maybe people who are not very informed about the work we are doing in Africa, especially in West Africa. So we have a network that is called Alarm for the Sahara. Alarm for the Sahara is part of Africa Europe Interact, which is another network that involves Africans and Europeans as well. They work together and we are active in many countries, as the media writer said. We are in the Maghreb, in Morocco, in Tunisia, and then in West Africa, in Niger, in Burkina Faso, Mali, Togo, and even in other more countries. They will not share. So, Alarm for the Sahara is really working, especially to tackle the freedom of movement in ECOWAS space, because historically speaking, many people in Africa used to move from a place to another, mainly in their own countries and in neighboring countries, because of many reasons. So Since the year 2015, this circular migration is facing a lot of challenges. Many countries are now on the way of officializing the externalization of European borders. So my country, Nigeria, where we work, is part of the ECOWAS country, which is made of 15 countries. So I would like some of you to see what Niger looks like. So we have 8 countries, which are neighboring countries, who are in the middle. Yeah, and from everywhere, people try to move towards the Maghreb, I mean Libya, Algeria, Tunisia, and Morocco. These were their favorite destinations years before. But since 2015, there were a lot of speech about their movement. We think that all of the people who are moving towards the north are intending to reach Europe. Which is not the reality, as the statistics show that only 2% of the people moving from Africa to the north reach Europe. Whereas the circular migration is something like 85% of the movement in the country. So it's good to know. So if I show that map, it's to highlight the origins of people who are coming to Niger. People come from Mali, from Burkina Faso, from Nigeria, and from other countries like Gambia, Ivory Coast, Liberia, Ghana, and they all try to cross Niger as a transit country. Or sometimes some of them consider Niger as a destination. To dive in the role of Frontex, I would like to point out that this particular picture, which is a picture at the border of Burkina Faso and Niger, where migrants have to pass through the prints, registration, and photos before they cross the country to reach Niger soil. It means that when this thing is done, everywhere that the migrants can be with the intention of the European Union to stop the people from migrating to Europe, it's easier to identify where the person came from. And then when there are deportations or pushbacks, it's easier for them to take this person back to his country of origin, regardless all the reasons that could be the main reason for moving the original place. Yeah. Maurice talked about the presence of the Frontex in some third countries. Yeah, Frontex is present in Niger. As you can see it on the left, this is the logo of our national police. And then we have also the logo of the Frontex, and they have what they call cellule d'analyse de risque. So they are there to collect data, analyze them, and share them with the European countries where they are more allowed, more free to do such activity, such role, or to play such role. Border control by Frontex between Niger, Algeria, and Libya. Matthias was talking about the equipment of the Frontex. Yeah, this is a photo of a car of Frontex moving in Niger for particular interventions. People would say, how can we really know that they are really active in countries like Niger or Algeria or Libya. So there are some testimonies from victims and some reports that we have from other people that really Frontex is active in our countries in Africa. Consider this is the man in green is has worked with us in our network Alarm for Sahara. At a certain moment, early in the morning one day, some people with masks on their faces, wearing uniforms, went into his room. They stopped him and put handcuffs on him. Then they took him in the desert. There, they took off the mask. They want to make photographs. He wondered, why are they doing this? So they say he is charged of trafficking people from Nigeria to Algeria and Libya. And another charge was also the his implication in terrorism, trafficking drugs. So this is the procedure used by police in our country to have one particular reason for arresting a person. So he was taken in the desert. He was taken. He was arrested in his home early in the morning, and the neighbors saw the moment when the operation took place, and then taken to the desert where they did pictures and directly drove him to Niamey, the administrative capital of Niger. There, he stayed for 12 months in prison. He stayed for 12 months in prison. He doesn't speak French correctly. And during the questionnaire, when the judge asked him questions, he said the translation he had it's not sure if really the person tells exactly what he says. So we wanted to know much more about the way the arrestation occurred. He said there were many policemen from Niger, as he said, who were surrounding his compound. Others jumped in, but when it was time to make the pictures in the desert, he realized that the people were white-skinned, and they were speaking fluent French, and they were the officers in charge of that very particular operation. So because of that, he stayed in jail for 12 months. And he got just what we call just temporarily released until they decide to tell if he's guilty or not. Yeah. He's in Agadez now. He wanted to get the document that allows him to work freely in Agadez. But when he went to the police, they said, no, you cannot get this particular document because you have your case still in the hands of the justice. So we even asked a lawyer to check what he was charged of particularly. So it was a lawyer who told us that there were a lot of charges that was attributed to that person. So and then the police sometimes wanted to criminalize us ourselves as a network. They even say among our in our network there are also some people who are active in migration, though there is a law that we call the 36-2000 law, which criminalizes the activity of migration, that I wanted just to explain to people. In this law, it is mentioned that if a person carries a migrant in his vehicle, he's considered to be a criminal. If you give shelter to a migrant, it's considered that you are also a criminal. If you have contact with that person
regarding the relation that you can have in the with the person from his country of origin, you are supposed to be also a trafficker. And even the motor taxi riders or the taxi riders, the drivers, if they carry people in the city of Agadez or somewhere in the in one of the cities of Niger, they were charged with being traffickers. So all this pressure reduces the needs for activists to be efficient on the ground. So we are trying to combat that very low. The other example that I would like to point out with the audience is the way people are limited in their freedom of movement inside ECOWAS. Inside ECOWAS, which is 15 countries that constitute the ECOWAS. Inside that that country, you cannot move freely at every international border. That's the border between countries. You have to get off of that bus. You have to go to the police check. You have to pay money, even if you have all the official documents. And then why do they ask for money? It's just to discourage people from moving to the north. And as activists, we experience that. My friend Mokhtar Danyaye, who is in the West working with other groups, we made that way to Ouagadougou, and we were also asked to pay money at checkpoints, which in the cities, in the city halls, before crossing the city halls, you have to get down, you have to pay money, though you have your passport, you have your yellow card, you have vaccination, all those documents does not help. So you are in the same situation with other people who don't have any single paper. So we even wrote a report that we have put on our social media to inform people about the reality on ground. So apart from the role, the intelligence role that Frontex is doing, they have organizations like IOM and UNHCR in Niger who play the back role in terms of returning people, in terms of helping people who are asylum seekers. So IOM says they organize the voluntary return. So we say IOM does not organize a voluntary, but it's a forced return because the migrants sometimes do not have any choice. They do not have any choice because when they are deported from Algeria or from Libya, they don't come to Niger with any belongings. Sometimes they just come with a shirt and some shorts. Some of them didn't even have shoes, so they have no choice. In the case of Africans, it's not easy for someone who has been supported by a community, by a village, by a family, to make the trip to collect money and come to support the family to return in the community without having that money. So in some cultures, we even say that it's the fault of the mother. The mother has not been very active in she did not give birth to a good son or to a good girl or a good daughter. So this is the reason why many people refuse to return, and for that, many thousands of them are stranded in Agadez, and they could not go forward, they cannot go backward. Here is an example of the manner the Algerian authorities proceed to arrest people and deport them to Niger. So we have always said that is not particularly good. And if we show this picture,
would like to point out to some people who don't know what this deportation from Algeria looks like. This place where our comrades are standing is what we call the no man's land or point zero. No man's land, it is at the Algerian-Nigerian border. It's just an empty place like that. It's at that specific point that people are asked to get off the lorries and move towards Asamaka village, which is 15 kilometers after the Algerian border towards Niger. And the people have to walk. Among the people, we can have old people, we can have pregnant women, we can have children, we can have disabled peoples, but they walk 15 kilometers in the night. It can be during the very hot season, as you can imagine in the desert, or it can be during the cold season. These people have to make it to Asamaka, where they are going to be registered by the police. And here are the kind of lorries used to deport people from Algeria. So no human rights are respected during these deportations. So I would like just to point out at the job of Alarm Fund Sahara, we have three main objectives: sensitization, documenting, and rescue. Sensitization is to raise awareness to the migrant or candidates of migration, because they really don't know the reality of the desert when they leave their countries. They think that traveling in the desert is like traveling between the city, I don't know, of Hamburg to Lenenburg, when you can have trains and cars, shuttles which are on time, and you just spend few very, very short moment. This is not the case. So a lot of things happen on the way. Documenting, yeah, we collect testimonies. The rescue mission, it happens that from time to time we go in the desert when we have distress calls to rescue people. So for the people who would like to follow us, here are our contacts. Yeah. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much, Aziz and Matthias. And we have some time for Q&A left. So if any of you have a question, you would speak into a microphone. You can say it now. And if there's questions that you rather don't speak in a microphone, you can also talk to them, of course, after the session. So you just show your hands. And I see a hand here. Awesome.
Hi. Thank you, Azizou. Thank you, Matthias. I just have a question, because Matthias, you said that Frontex is not operational in African countries, or this is how I understood it. But from what I understood from Azizou, what he said now, and also from other friends in Senegal, that Frontex is present in the airport of Dakar, and asking people where they are going, and yeah, stopping people from entering. I don't know what to call it. So my first question, what is the difference between being operational and being present in a country? Like what kind of technicality is there? And for me also, it is very important to speak about Frontex, but it's also, I think, some discussions should also be open. As Azizou mentioned, IOM and UNHCR, which are UN agencies financed by mainly the European countries, and the ICMDP, which is an intergovernmental organization that, unlike Frontex, they don't have their assets, but rather buy the assets for the African countries. And I think it's just a small remark that also some light should be shadowed on the role of UN agencies and the ICMDP.
Thank you.
One or two more?
Okay, we can also collect more. If you show your hand, I can run to you.
Thanks for the presentations. I have a question towards you, Matthias. You gave the example of the boat that was discovered by Frontex in front of Montenegro, and that was reported to the Coast Guard of Montenegro. And you said one important point that I didn't know before, so it was worth it coming here already, that the European Coast Guard cannot bring back the refugees to the country of origin, so Italian Coast Guard cannot bring back refugees from Libya to Libya. So the Coast Guard of Montenegro is, as I know, it's not in the European Union, so what do they do with the refugees when they pick them up? So that's my question. Do they then just try to come back again? But, so I'm wondering what's happening to the refugees then.
You're really good in remembering all those things, I hope.
One more.
So last question here before we have answers.
Thank you. So you were talking about the different laws in Nigeria, and if I understood right, they are like laws like actively like criminalizing people who help people who are migrating. So my question would be like, how were these laws created, or like what were the initial like interests that led to these laws and developments?
Yeah, so regarding the questions, like the contradiction, I said Frontex is officially not operating in these countries, but Aziz proved that Frontex is. You have to distinguish between border surveillance and border control. So border control is happening at an airport or a seaport or a land border crossing point. Border surveillance is all the rest. So to prevent people from crossing the border outside a regular border crossing point. And the Frontex missions are normally border surveillance missions. So they are watching by planes, by drones, by satellites, or on the ground with troops. Like in, I forgot the numbers, I think in Albania, there were like more than 100 Frontex border guards watching, preventing people from crossing the border. This kind of operation is not happening in any African country. So there is no 100 Frontex officers or from the member states coordinated by Frontex operating at the borders. But Frontex is itself kind of coordinating. So Frontex is present. For example, in the Sahara countries, the European Union, they have also military missions, like in Mali, for example. Or they have a police training mission, which is different from Frontex, also in Niger. But Frontex has an agreement with those missions, with the military mission and the police mission. And Frontex is present and is kind of influencing them. Perhaps I would suggest also initiating missions, like you said. So I think there is no doubt. But officially, they are not coordinating. They are kind of supporting these other missions. And Frontex is, of course, present for these risk analysis cells that I had been mentioning as well. So this kind of collecting intelligence, which is more like not a border guard mission. It is more like, I would call it a secret service. So Frontex is acting like kind of a secret service. And then the question about what is Montenegro doing with the refugees they intercepted on behalf of the EU, like initiated by Frontex. To be honest, about Montenegro, I actually don't know. It's an interesting question, I have to admit. But from other countries, we know that they themselves have deportation agreements with other countries. So to bring the people back, we call it chain deportation, Kettenabschiebung. Or perhaps this is not the best example for a chain deportation, but let's say Frontex is giving the information, Montenegro is intercepting them, arresting them, and bringing them back probably to the neighbor country where they might have come from. By boat, it's a bit complicated, so perhaps you don't know where they started. Did they start in Greece? did they start in Albania, so where to bring them back, but that is the idea. And this is, I find it also interesting, I mean, you can, perhaps Aziz can talk about that, it's much more obvious in African countries, so these chain deportations, so that the EU, like Aziz explained the example of Algeria and Libya, so the people are pushed back from Algeria to Niger, but they might have come already from Libya. So the Libyans are pushing the people back to Algeria, the Algerians back to Niger, and this is what usually happening in these cases. And his question was?
Yeah, the other question was related about the law 36/2015, how what it was initiated. Yeah, you know, I don't have to go deeper in it. The law is said to be initiated from the government or from the parliament, but this particular law, we as activists in Niger, we think that it was the desire of the European Union that we have to initiate a law, because in that law there were many things. There were many things that we don't agree with. First of all, when the law was initiated and discussed in the parliament and then met in application in 2016, there was no information to the actors of migration. Whereas the activity of migration was, I say, an ancestral action. Because before the migration, there was what we call tourism. Many Europeans wanted to go to the deserts to see the fabulous dunes of sand. And so during the years 1980s, people used to go to the desert on camels. Yeah, they discovered these places, then stay peacefully for sometimes, and it makes incomes to the communities in Niger in general and in Agadez. But there were some raise-ups, some rebellions in 1990s, then in 20s. At a certain moment, we said that Niger territory is not safe. So tourism was stopped somehow. And finally, these people who didn't know any other activity apart from guiding people through the desert, found that migration as another economical activity. So they bought 404 cars that they can drive, and they have the mastery of the desert. One day, people said, no, this activity is forbidden. They don't know why, because there were no information towards the community, no information towards the candidates of migration, no information about the drivers, the owners of the car, the owners of the compounds, the taxi drivers and taxi motor drivers. We say every person involved in this activity is supposed to be part of the group of human traffickers. And for that reason, there were, for the first very action on ground, 130 vehicles were confiscated. The drivers were put in prison, some for 70 months, others for a year. And at the end, these vehicles were sold, what do you say?
Confiscated?
Yeah, confiscated, but sold to other people. What do you say that? Sold. Yeah, it was sold to other people, not to the owners themselves. And then, from that moment, every person who does not respect the content of this law is suspected to be part of a criminal group. So this action, this weapon is even above our head as activists. Many of activists in Niger have been in prison because we try to defend that we try to go against that law. And we we have a complaint against Niger Republic or Niger States because of that very law that we want either to revise in some of its articles which are not respecting the human rights, or maybe completely changing into another one. But we now know that Niger government has a new document that they call document, new document of orientation related to the migration from the period 2020 to 2035. But I read a document this morning or this afternoon where in this document, I think this other document also is not the real need or desire of the of Niger government, neither Niger parliament. It was also another type of pressure for the European Union to head about this migration control. Thank you.
We have a third speaker, so we wanted to end this. I think we have 5 more minutes or something, 8 more minutes. We also want to end this with a little positive energy. So there is not only repression and control, there is also movement. And this is what Dorette will talk about.
Okay, I'm Dorette from Afrique Europe Interact. This is actually the covering network in which Frame Alarm for Sahara is also working. And we are like trying to develop for 10 years now the cooperation between grassroots groups on the European and the African side, especially in West Africa, and in this frame also the Alarm for Sahara has come out as an initiative together in this cooperation. Yes, and just to add to the information, our first action was a caravan in 2011. And even there we took action against Frontex. Maybe it was not official yet, or it was this border surveillance on the border between Mali and Mauritania. So we took an action in the Sahara as a big group of activists, 200 activists. We were on a caravan together from to the World Social Forum from Bamako to Dakar. And also in Dakar, we took an action against an office of Frontex, which was already there and worked concerning the boats to the Canary Islands, because in this time, still, there were many boats to Canary Islands, and then it was a lot of, because of the repression also, it has gone down a lot, but now in the last time, it has come up again in a big number. But in this time, still, it was really strong. Yes, and I just want to say, yes, we are also in a small working group for concerning Alarm for Sahara in Niger. And so I just wanted to, yeah, we are also collecting donations, but we also, I just ask if people are interested in our work. It's also the Alarm for Sahara, but also the Afrique Europe Interact. There are also some newspapers there, and also if are people more interested to really become part of teams, it's also always a possibility. So yeah, that's I wanted to say, and we are going on, but it's not so simple. But yeah, the attention in Europe concerning this question, what is going on in on the ground in West Africa, is always little bit complicated to make the attention, so I'm very glad that so many people are here to follow this and to show their attention. Thanks a lot. So and one more word more, we have also a newsletter from Afrique Europe Interact, so if you're interested in more information, every 1 or 2 months there's a newsletter, and so we have a paper, so it goes round, so if you are interested you can sign and you will get the newsletter.
Cool.
couple that's running around here. We have one more question from the audience, and then we can also say how to find you here during the next few hours.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you for these great presentations and this amazing work that you do. I work for the IOM here in Germany. I'm obviously not here as an IOM spokesperson, but I still like to share some observations regarding Frontex from my work that I'm involved in. And that is that by the minute, we're really moving away from something that can be considered an abolition of Frontex. Maybe some of you followed the topic and they followed Jan Böhmermann, you know, having a Frontex special here in Germany, and then the former head of Frontex resigning, seeing that maybe as a positive sign that maybe, you know, Frontex is really getting shaky now. But I really see it in a different way, because the budget for Frontex for the next 6-7 years has been massively upscaled recently, and the European Union is planning to, you know, really use Frontex as the organ to branch out and manage migration from Europe and to Europe, right? So whereas in the past years we've seen that member states kind of, you know, did their own thing regarding migration control and voluntary return, they now want to streamline this with Frontex being the main actor. And that means that Frontex by that gains legitimacy, because it takes on all of these other tasks, and is also becoming a donor, right? Because now Frontex is suddenly the ones that have the money, and they say, hey, look, we need actors that implement for us this work of voluntary return and reintegration. So this is just an observation I wanted to share, that there's a lot of work to be done, and maybe if Frontex is here to stay, it will be continuous work to really look closer and criticize what they do when maybe no one else is looking. And then I would also have a question for Aziz regarding the African Union and the Common African Passport, which is, I'm not really sure where that is right now. They were speaking about rolling that out in 2020 or 2021. I don't know how much the pandemic affected that, but I was wondering those problems that you were mentioning regarding migrating from Burkina Faso, for example, to Nigeria or elsewhere at the border. At the border crossings. Do you think that this will be changing once the countries that have committed to adopting the African passport, the common African passport that will work like the European passport, do you think this will kind of override the influence that Europe has taken on African borders? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the question. Yeah, regarding this common passport, I would say, according to us, this project will not be effective because the regulations going on now have created a kind of misunderstanding between the members of the ECOWAS, and there's a kind of revenge between countries. If you go into a country, the police in charge of migration, they would say, in your country, your police used to blame our citizens, and so we are going to behave. So there is some sort of, I could say, demolishing the union, the solidarity that exists in Africa for years. Now politicians are just being guided by other particular reasons that cannot make this dream effective. Thank you.
Let me please add something. So it was interesting to hear the perspective of IOM. I mean, in our presentation, we could only explain the tip of the icebergs, as you probably are aware of. And we can also talk about the role of the IOM and the UNHCR. Of course, they are not Frontex, so they are refugee organizations, but they are players in the game. So, for example, if people are deported from Libya, they are deported to Niger, and the camps are run by the UNHCR and by the IOM. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Of course, it's ambivalent, I would say. Yeah, I just want to say, like, this whole, we wanted to give a very brief overview of the whole machine, where, like, how the EU is working, how they are externalizing it, how Frontex is the border police executing it. But of course, there are other players that make the broad picture. We are here for the next lecture, like listening. So in the next half an hour, if you want to have more, so you're here as well, no? Yeah.